Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your casino lobby love tap of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. We are going to talk about the unlikeliest of pop star, quote unquote pop, quote unquote star. A very famous person. We're going to talk about Lil Durk. Lil Durk has been around for a decade and is having a huge moment in the last couple of years. He's got a big record with J. Cole. It's called All My Life. We were just listening to it. Lil Durk is in an unusual position where he is having this incredible success, big album, Billboard hit, collaborations with Morgan Wallen, which we'll revisit later, and yet somehow remains off on the margins, doesn't feel like the crossover rap stars of the past. So we're going to have a big conversation about Durk and Durk's history with Andrew Barber from Fake Shore Drive, who has been documenting Durk since the very beginning. Before we get there, Popcast Deluxe is on YouTube. We are six or seven by this point, seven episodes deep, I believe. Me and Joe on there every week. Check it out. Just the NY Times YouTube channel, or type Popcast Deluxe into the YouTube search. Also, we're low on shirts, low on stickers. It's the popcast.myshopify.com. We're cleaning out inventory. We're going to restock at a certain point. So go ahead and tap in, and I will get those out to you in the mail. And now let's just get into it. When you're talking about Lil Durk, there really is only one phone call to make. It's Andrew Barber. Andrew is the proprietor of Fake Shore Drive. If you have learned anything about Chicago rap in the last 10 years, David Drake, don't call me.
Dude, don't push David Drake. He's
I know, you're right. First of all, don't push David. David, we love you.
We love you, Dave.
Andrew Barber was there. Andrew was there and has been there and remains there. If you're not checking in with Andrew when you go to Chicago, I don't really know what you're doing. Andrew, is this your first time on Popcast? Have you been on
It is your first time. Thank you, man. I've been waiting. You know, I've been patiently waiting in the wings to catch the invite, man. So I'm happy to
literally
be here.
Literally unthinkable and quiab, but I can't think of a better topic to have you come and talk on. You have a long history of covering Durk. We're there very early. We're going to get back to that early stuff, but I think we can't properly reverse contextualize the early years without saying that we are living in a moment where Lil Durk has a top three Billboard song right now.
And not just one of those fake songs that just streams real well in the first week or two. Like, it is on the radio nonstop in Chicago. Anytime I turn on a car, it's playing. My kids love it. It's a different type of hit.
So we heard it at the beginning of the show. It's All My Life. It is a collaboration with J. Cole, in and of itself interesting. We'll come back to that. I've heard it on the radio here, and not only on rap radio. I'm pretty sure I heard it on Z100. It's that kind of crossover hit. Now, Durk is in a really interesting moment where he's had two different kinds of crossover hits happening in the last 24 months. We have this record, which is a pop-focused record that features J. Cole, who is an artist who I would say is thematically distinct from Durk, but J. Cole obviously collaborates widely, and I think also likes to show up on records with guys like Durk. That's one thing. Durk is also two hits deep with Morgan Wallen, the country superstar Morgan Wallen, Broadway Girls, and then on the new record, Stand By Me, a very pop record produced by Dr. Luke. Does it surprise you as a longtime observer of Lil Durk that he has two types of quote-unquote crossover hits? Again, outmoded idea. Play with it for a sec. Two different sorts of crossover hits in two different spaces that are these kinds of spaces. As someone who's been watching this man for 10 years, does this shock you? Are you surprised? Do you think he always had this in him?
Yes and no. I'm super excited for him. I'm happy that this has happened. This is like a Nelly type of thing where you're having crossover on a, it's the melody thing, not to compare him to Nelly, but it's the, you know, Nelly was able to kind of, you know, play in country where he plays most of the time now, but Durk did it, man. And I've watched this guy climb up. They've counted him out a number of times. And just to get like, I feel like vindicated because I knew he was a star from the beginning. Did I know that he would become this big? There was potential to be there, but I think this is beyond kind of anyone's expectations.
we don't have loads of contemporary rap stars who are Drake-like in the sense that they are also huge mainstream celebrities. To me, the biggest rap star of the last 5 years is Youngboy. But Youngboy has no public profile. He doesn't do press in any meaningful way. He's on house arrest still. All his fans are on YouTube. It's a shadow kind of stardom. To me, Dirk's stardom is more in keeping with that kind of stardom than what we think of as like big rap stardom. How has he, in your mind, been able to take what feels to me like the shadow stardom, but still deliver hits that are this big and this big tent? What is it about Dirk as a rapper that allows that?
It's the same thing that I saw from the beginning, really. Just he has the look. He knows how to make songs. He plays with melody. He was always good at getting in with the right people, too, like the right artists. He knows the right people to collab with. And I think that's just like a sixth sense almost in a way. And I think he's been able to like maintain his street credibility in a way that a lot of other popular rappers that have crossed over haven't been able to do, which I think is important to his career and why his fans stick with him. He has a diehard fan base, and he has for years, but it just keeps growing and growing. But I think he's had some hits. You know, he was on the Drake record a few years ago, which was huge. And I think that was like his real I'm here, I've arrived type of moment. But he was still—
I think a lot of people learned about him.
Yeah.
Even though he'd been around for 7 years at that point. Like a lot of people learned about him on that record, I think.
But I think it was still like, this is cool. What's he going to do next? And then he just keeps rolling on top of it. And then to me, this moment, the All My Life record is the one. Like, okay, this guy is becoming a household name in a way. He's coming from the shadows to the point where, you know, 7, 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids know who Little Dirk is now. Soccer moms know who Little Dirk is now. It's that type of record.
But what's bizarre about it to me is he still feels like he's not totally out of the shadows. And this is actually, I had a funny moment. Did you watch the Nardwar Dirk interview?
Of course. Yeah. He shouted me out in there. And I was very happy about that.
So. He shouted you out in there. But I was watching the Nardwar Dirk interview and I was like, he's still somehow in the shadows. He's arrived. He's playing this huge festival in his hometown. He's doing a Nardwar interview. And yet somehow he's not totally like giving it all up. He's still like giving 3-word answers to questions. He's never
liked to interview. I did his first interview, as a matter of fact.
I have no doubts of that whatsoever. But
I hate to keep dropping these things.
Why you're here. It's literally why you're here. But I was struck by how the Dirk who shows up on the Nardwar interview in 2023 is probably not all that different from the Dirk of 2018 or even 2013. It's probably not that different of a
guy.
Not at all. He's not like, I'm super famous now, therefore I'm going to act different, therefore I'm going to be more forthcoming, more revealing, more present as a figure. None of that stuff seems to be in play. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say. I haven't seen Dirk in a little while, but every time I see him, it's the same thing. He's always the same. He's never switched up and been Hollywood. Whenever he sees me, it's always love. And I've always thought he was a really good guy. He's always been solid with me. But I think this is part of that larger conversation that I see happening. You know, it's been happening over the past couple of years. Is that era of the huge mega star in any genre kind of dying? And you have these, and I think he's now straddling these two worlds of, you know, my pocket knows me to where I'm crossing over for everybody. And it's like, so it'd be interesting to see where this goes 6 months to a year. Does he fully cross over and become a household name, or does he still straddle those two worlds?
Does he end up on like a Dua Lipa record or something?
I think so.
You think it could go there?
I'm surprised it hasn't already. I mean, Dirk's a monster, dude. Like, he's doing two nights at the United Center next month. That's crazy. That's a huge place. And I don't know of any other Chicago rapper who's done two nights there other than Kanye.
Totally fair. And again, the thing that we have to remind people, and Dirk's catalog is so deep.
Deep.
So many tapes, so many YouTube popular records, so many like collaborations with people you love that maybe only have 3 million views, but are still hitting. There's so many records like that. So to piggyback on what you just said about the main big crossover type stars, is that going away? Like, Dirk strikes me as something that I've often thought about, which is like mainstream cult artists who are basically dedicated fan base artists. huge in their worlds, whatever world that is. That could be Chicago rap. That could be Texas country. That could be British dance music. But who have gathered 5, 10, 15 million people enough to fill the United Center two times over, enough to fill the Garden in for certain artists, enough to fill SoFi Stadium or whatever. Like, it could be Zach Bryan. It could be Fred again. It's these people don't make music that I think of as like Billboard top 10 music. But if enough people like the music you make, it ends up in the Billboard top 10.
You go back 20 years, even 15 years, you pretty much knew everybody or every song that was in the top 10 rap charts. Like, you knew what you'd heard the song. Now it's like there's stuff in there that you've never heard and you never will hear. They stream really well. They work their way up for a couple of days or weeks and then they disappear. But now I keep coming back to this All My Life record because I cannot believe how much it has crossed over and how much I'm hearing it now. It's going to continue climbing. It could end up being number one for...
It still feels like it's going... This is the thing. It's been out for a few weeks, obviously, but it still feels like it's on its ascent. It's big, but it doesn't feel like... I think you're right. It doesn't feel like it's ceilinged.
I don't know whose idea it was to do that record, but it was very smart. And I don't know if they even thought of it in a way that, like, when I heard it, where I'm like, okay, this reminds me of Nas I Can or those type of records where they have kids on the hook. And I don't even know if they were thinking of it like that, but it was like, from the moment I heard it, I'm like, oh man, this is the one for him. I think this is it.
But I think also to be at the point in your career where you think you can do a record with like kids singing the chorus, that's not a first mixtape kind of choice. That's not a third mixtape kind of choice. The I Can is a great example. It's a type of record that subconsciously, even if you don't know it consciously, subconsciously, you're inviting people in because they're going to get captured by the kids. The kids are going to bring people in that your part can never possibly bring in. So you have to know that's a weapon that you're deploying, but you also got to deploy it at the right point in your career. Because if you did that so early, all of a sudden you're just that guy. You're just the rapper with kids on the chorus. Nobody really messes with you. They mess with the song.
Jay did that with Hard Knock Life too, right? But it was the Annie sample. It was the kid chorus. He hit it at the right time.
It's
that timing. It's that intuition. If Jay did that on Reasonable Doubt, it would not have been.
It wouldn't know. If he did it on Reasonable Doubt, it would have been laughed out the room.
Right, exactly.
Totally laughed out the room. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Dirk as a rapper and as a melodist. We got to talk about 2012, 2013. In the context of what was happening in Chicago in that era, the sort of foundation of drill, Keefs of the world, that time period. What was Dirk's... You want to listen to L's Anthem?
L's Anthem.
Let's listen to L's Anthem, just to get a little bit of early Dirk flavor. What is it that Dirk was doing at that time that felt unique given what was happening in the rest of the scene?
He stood out to me at that moment. I think, okay, and to shout out David Drake again, you know, we got to run it back and call him back out here. I remember talking with him very early on. Dirk had a song with King Louie called I Get Paid. Now, that was the first, I believe that was the first little Dirk song that I ever heard. And it was like a juke song. It was like a beat. The beat was like a, almost like a juke house type of record, like a Chicago juke. It was like a footwork type of beat. And actually, Fireman might have did that, who went on to work on Donda and do a bunch of other stuff. It was more of that type of, and King Louie was on it. And I think that might have been like where I was like, oh, okay, this guy's doing that. He's doing the, you know, wasn't called drill at the time, but he's doing kind of like that hard new era Chicago street rap, but he had melody in it. And it's like, you know, melody always works.
But even in that scene, because you don't think of 2012 Chicago as a melodic era.
That's why he stood out. Right. Not at all. But that's why, because he was doing that. The subject matter was the same. He was doing that over those same type of beats. Where some of the other people, some of the other artists were doing more traditional type of rapping over that. He comes and has a more of a sing-songy type of flow. And in that Nardwar interview, he actually states that Bone Thugs and Harmony inspired him to rap. Which I don't,
huge.
If I knew that, I'd forgotten that. But that makes so much sense now,
it
right?
It makes a tremendous amount of sense. It's like, I can't believe I didn't think of it independently. It makes so much sense.
And in that time, Complex had tapped me to write a top 10 Chicago rappers to, or 10 Chicago rappers to watch. And I had Keith, King Louie, Chance the Rapper, Dirk. I had a bunch of those guys on there. And Dirk was like he was like the only one kind of like him, not in the drill thing, but like that had like more of the melody thing. And I think he had those influences at the time. The drill stuff was kind of, you know, it kind of borrowed a little bit from Waka and Gucci, because that's what they were playing on the radio nonstop in Chicago at the time. Like DJ Ferris, Power 92, it was like Brick Squad all day over there. And then it had a little bit of a 3-6 Mafia with the Chants and stuff in it. And then the Chicago like Young Chop type of production. But then Dirk just comes with this melodic type of thing. And it was just different. He stood out and he had the look. I think a lot of times people might sleep on that. He just had like that it factor a lot of times that you could just see. And you're like, okay, this guy has a lot of potential. And then I quickly tracked him down and we started communicating then. And then him and Lil Reese had some songs. And then he happened quick. He might've actually been, I think, come to think of it, Dirk and Reese got signed by No ID to Def Jam at the same time. They were the first two guys to be signed on a major label of that drill wave.
They got signed before Keith got signed?
They did. Keith was fielding all those deals. So Keith held out until, I want to say, like June or July of 2012, whereas Reese and Dirk signed in like April or something like that. So like he beat them to the punch by a few months. They got taken out to L.A. J Boogie and No ID got them to L.A. They signed because I think they wanted to put them as a duo initially. And those guys got signed out the gate. And I think there was immediately after some problems start happening and people start getting locked up and, you know, the chemistry had changed, but he kept working, man. He refined it. And here we are 10 years later and he's top five on the charts right now.
In that era in Chicago, you're documenting all this in real time, but you're documenting a scene that maybe wasn't totally ready to be documented in like the classic rap journalism sense. What was it like tracking folks down? What was it? Was it hard to get Dirk on the phone? Was it hard to do his first interview? How did it tell us a little bit about that and what it was like?
They had been trying to get on Fake Short Drive or whatever. And because we were like, there was other blogs in Chicago, of course, Ruby Hornet and different people covering the scene.
When did you launch? When did Fake Short start?
07, October 07. So this is, we're going into our 16th year. But I think I reached out to him on Twitter. And I said, man, I love your music. And we just started communicating. And I had him come up to my office at the time. And Lyrical, she's a manager. She's done a lot in the scene. It was Lyrical, Shy Mecca. Who else was there? Her name was Chinchilla Meek at the time. And then D Gaines might have been with him. So I think it was Lyrical, D Gaines, and Chinchilla Meek came up to my office. And Dirk was just in the back seat of a car, like just a random car. And they came up and hung out in the office and he was still very 1-2 word answers. It was all brand new. It's like these guys, this was what changed about the music industry at that time. It was like, there was no polish to anybody or anything. These guys were just making music in the living room of somebody's house. And then
bedrooms, basements, straight to YouTube.
Boom. It's going straight to YouTube. And then these guys are like getting, it all happened so fast. So these guys go from being completely unknown to, hey, now I'm getting an interview. Blogs want to write about me and like labels are trying to fly me out. It was like it all happened so fast. It didn't seem like it. But looking back now, I mean, these are just like, you know, within a few weeks time, these things are happening. Dirk came and he spent a day at the office and we hung out and I tried to give him as much little bit of knowledge that I had at the time about just being careful, like what to sign and what to look out for, because it was like blood in the water. Because everybody, I've still never experienced anything like that 2012, 2013 era in Chicago. It was like the gold rush.
I remember watching it from New York, and it's interesting to hear it from your side, from the Chicago side. Because I remember from my side, it was one of the first times that I felt like I would talk to record label people and they understood that they were completely out of the loop. They absolutely had no idea. It just was a thing that happened on the internet. David wrote his piece about Keith. The YouTube numbers are real. They're not like, it's not puffed up in YouTube numbers. Like real things are happening on YouTube. And there's a bunch of guys sitting in offices that are like, what?
They just didn't.
And it's like, and I remember thinking, Now, look, I don't trust A&Rs, broadly speaking. People miss shit all the time. I get it. I remember thinking as a movement, I was like, nobody is getting it in real time. Everybody's rushing to play catch up. It really felt that. And to be honest, that still feels like what's happening today. Like
they would never caught up. No,
it really does feel like that. Like, I feel like the 2012 template of what happened with Chicago Drill and major labels is essentially what's happened with every local / regional scene subsequent to that, up and through Brooklyn Drill, Bronx Drill. Like, it all feels basically the same to me. And also whatever viral TikTok hits are happening, it really feels like day late, dollar short. But Chicago feels like the template for all that still.
Yeah, so let's hurry up and try to get there and throw money at it. A&Rs were calling me and be like, man, if you can get me a meeting with Keith or Chance or Dirk, I'll give you your own label. Like, I'll give you a Fix Your Drive label. Now anybody can get a label. That was unheard. I was like, oh, wow. And then they'd be like, if we can't get Keith, we can't afford him. Can you get us somebody else? So it was like,
They didn't care.
It felt like rappers were almost falling out of the sky at that moment because it was just so much going on. They were popping up everywhere. And it was just like, it was A&Rs here like every day. It was a very wild time.
It really is the template for everything that I think has happened subsequent to then. All right. So Dirk signs to Def Jam. Let's play Like Me, which is the single off of, I think, the first Def Jam record. This is Like Me. It's Dirk and Jeremiah.
Have you ever met a Shacktown? Girl, I heard you need a go-getter. You ain't never meet a rapper with a swag of a savage and dope dealer. On the real that you, I know you tired of them road. Heard he brought you a bag for it. Why you f***ing with them road? Ginger ale and a fifth of lick.
Now, I remember thinking like, they got this guy, they got an R&B feature. It's like, what? I don't know if this is exactly right. It didn't feel totally right to me, but there was still that moment where you're like, Keith somehow, even with his Interscope deal, still felt like an underground hero. So you're thinking like, maybe someone's going to be the crossover guy, like someone from the scene. And this was Def Jam's, I think, attempt to make Dirk that guy. That's how it felt to me. Why did it seem to you in the city?
Yeah, no, it did. It felt like, okay, because Jeremiah was, you know, Jeremiah's on Def Jam already. And Jeremiah's like that. He's on everything. Everything that he was touching at the moment was, and it, I think Like Me ended up going gold or platinum. I know it went gold for sure. I don't know if it went platinum. But I think everybody kind of like wanted Dirk to be This Ain't What You Want, which came before that. That was like the single, like before the album. And then, but it ended up being Like Me was the one that kind of got a little radio play, did a thing. But to even rewind that a little bit more, it felt like Keith and Finally Rich was the litmus test in Chicago, or just the litmus test for drill in general, because he got this alleged $6 million deal, which came with the headphones and the movie and all this other stuff. And then Finally Rich comes out and it doesn't do like blockbuster numbers, but
a classic though.
And it is now platinum, but at the time it was antiquated, like the way that they were measuring the success. Like, everybody was streaming that and listening to it on YouTube. Nobody was buying CDs, or Keith's fans were not buying CDs or going to the Apple store.
Of course not.
They were streaming it, and the streaming metrics didn't match up to, they're not what they are now. So they looked at that like a failure. So I think a lot of the labels did not invest anymore in drill. They kind of looked at it like, okay, this is it. If Keith, the face guy of this, did not blow up, then, I mean, he did blow up, but like, he didn't become this commercial success, then let's pull back. And I felt like that's what happened with Def Jam, in a sense, at that time with Dirk. Is like, all right, we're going to hit the smaller button on him. We're not going to hit the big button on him, because, you know, there are the buttons at the labels, what they decided. And I feel like they just hit like a middle button on him. And that was about it.
That's a funny way to put it, but I think that that's totally right. And I think you're right also to contextualize it in terms of like the Keith quote unquote failure, which is not an aesthetic failure. It's not a stylistic failure. It's actually not really a commercial failure. What it is it didn't match up to the alleged hype. That's really what it was. It didn't, I don't know. It's like being popular in one country, but on another country. It's like you want it to be popular in one country, but it's actually popular somewhere totally different.
The industry metrics weren't ready for it at the time. He's proven to be that guy. I mean, he's, you know, he's the legend now, but I think there's also a lot of people that wanted him to fail at the time, but that's a whole nother conversation.
We will revisit when we do the 7-part drill history. Okay. So Dirk is on Def Jam for a couple albums. As I said to you before we started recording, I had to double check this. Dated Dej Loaf has a song with Dej Loaf, My Beyonce.
Yeah.
we don't necessarily have to listen to it, but this, like, there's a moment, and I remember thinking at that time, is this the crossover? Are you going to get known as part of, like, a rap couple?
Right. Nelly and Kelly type of moment where it's
exactly.
Like,
right. But it's like, and is that going to become what you're known for? Like, it couldn't be further away from where you were 3 years prior. But I think maybe luckily that era comes to an end pretty quickly. Can we talk about then eventually he signs up with Alamo, but they're really, it's like a mixtape run in 2016, 2017, 2018. In your mind, remembering that era of Dirk, how did that music strike you compared to both what was on the Def Jam records, but also like 2012, like 1.0 Lil Durk type music?
And around that time, the Dej Loaf, because Dej Loaf was dope, and Dirk, they kind of had a similar style, and it was cool, but it also felt a little forced. And I don't know if he was totally into that. I think that's when him and Def Jam, they started having issues, right? They started having problems. And I remember being in a, like a meeting with one of the A&Rs at Def Jam. And it's like the same day that this Dirk and Lil Reese album comes out on Empire. And I think that was 2017. It was like Super Vultures. It had some really good songs on it. And I'm like, dude, how is Dirk putting out projects on Empire? Like, this doesn't make any sense. I thought, is he off Def Jam? And the Def Jam people were just like, oh, we don't know. It's like a weird situation. And it just felt like Dirk was like just moving on his own. And I knew his team, they felt like Def Jam was dropping the ball with him. So he didn't wait. He wasn't like going to just sit on the shelf and collect dust. He started creating his own momentum. That's when he goes off the grid, starts dropping stuff on Empire, starts putting out mixtapes, and he just goes crazy. And then he pops up signed to Alamo. And I was just like, man, I got some homies at Alamo. It felt like, man, this is interesting. I wasn't sure what to think about it because I think the consensus at that moment, at least from the label perspective, was, man, Dirk's over. This is it for Dirk.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it was a little bit, I feel like 2017, a little dead in the water. And if you look at the other folks from Chicago from that era, the longevity was not there. Nobody really was putting out stuff by this point.
And this is Chance. It becomes Chance's World. Like 2013, for that, it's all about Chance the Rapper in Chicago, period.
I'm sure Herbo or Bibby or whoever did put out records in these years, but they were not at the center of the conversation. And Dirk, I think you're right. Just like, hell with this. I'm taking the baton. I'm doing it my way. And I will say this. You look at the Dirk discography page on Wikipedia. The amount of collaborations that he's doing this era are crazy. He's doing records with literally everybody. And I haven't heard a bunch of these records because I feel like they're probably just straight to YouTube records. But he's really out here working. And I think building the foundation for what we're at now. Like this, like the foundation for 2023 feels like it was built in this era, not necessarily in 2012, 2013, or not as much.
We did a show in 2016 in Minneapolis. I was doing shows with Red Bull all over at the time. And I had Dirk headline because I wasn't able to do a Dirk show in Chicago because he was...
The police wouldn't let it?
Police would not let any Dirk show. And I think that ended 3 or 4 years ago when he started being able to do a show, maybe 3 years ago.
Insane.
But yeah, I couldn't do a Dirk show. And I'd always wanted to do a Dirk show, so we had to do it in Minneapolis. So I did a Dirk show in Minneapolis and... The club was probably, you know, like 1,000 person, not even 1,000, maybe 500, 600 person club. There's maybe 200 people there. I thought it would bang out because in Chicago it would have gone crazy. But up there, it was just like, it wasn't empty, but it wasn't like, and I remember somebody at Def Jam was like, see, I told you, like, dude, he's over. But he was never, oh, dude, he has something. And when you talk to him, you can see it in his eyes. He just has this will to really. He wants it. And some people want it more than others. He wanted it. He's always wanted it. And he's never stopped working towards that. And I think that's one of the most impressive things about him. His will, because people have counted him out so many times since 2012. He's been counted out a number of times, especially at that moment. When he left Def Jam, it felt like, oh man, the industry is abandoning him. But dude, Alamo put a battery in his back and it's been on ever since.
All right. So we're going to play one random collaboration. It's not that random. Spin the Block with Future. This is a 2018 record, I think. This is like when Dirk was like left for dead. But here we are. This is a hit as far as I'm concerned.
He moves to Atlanta and look, this is what happens.
on. Ooh, I ride around with my Draco. Ooh, I ride around with my mask on.
Spin the block, spin it one more time. All the way, all the way. Got the drop on your center side. Me and Durky, yo, go back to back. Hanging out the window, Mac to Mac.
Tell me about that move to Atlanta. Like, in your mind, from talking to him and talking to his people, was that move to Atlanta as much to be around the people making music in Atlanta, or was it also you hit a ceiling in Chicago at a certain point? Especially, you can't do shows. You've done records with everybody you can do records by, and also it's tough. You're coming from a tough circumstance, and now you're one of the guys, and maybe that's a tough. It's tough to still be in the city as crazy as you were before.
Yeah, it's all those things. It's all the above. There's a lot of personal stuff going on. He kept getting in trouble. It felt like the cops were really like on his ass, like trying to. He kept getting arrested for different stuff, even if it was little stuff. Just felt like the cops were messing with him. There was also some tragedy. You know, he had some deaths in his inner circle, street stuff. And I think Chicago just wasn't a good. He'd hit a ceiling here. He needed a new breath of fresh air, a new outlook. Then he goes to Atlanta, where, let's just be honest, that's the capital of hip hop for the past 20 years or so. And there's a thriving industry there for him and a lot of like-minded collaborators. So he goes to Atlanta, starts working with Future and Thug and everybody else that's down there. And that continues to build his profile. And then Vaughn comes around and Vaughn starts blowing up. Those two, they start working together and Vaughn starts rapping. And it was just like, it was like the perfect storm. And a lot of that stuff just couldn't have happened in Chicago. Number one, the artists, a lot of those artists don't, if they come here, they come do a show and they leave. They don't stay and hang out for a long time.
So Durk finds new life in Atlanta through collaboration and I assume through producers and so on and so forth. And also I think this thing happens, and this happens not just to Durk, but I think this is a hip hop thing in general. When you start out, people really associate you with where you're from. Like you are indelibly attached to the scene, especially with a scene as potent as Chicago Drill in the early 2010s. But 5 years go by, you're just a rapper. And I don't mean that in a bad way. You could be in Atlanta. And a lot of people live, like I'm even someone like Too Short moved to Atlanta for a bunch of years. But you still, Too Short's an Oakland rapper, but it's like, he's an Oakland rapper who lived in Atlanta or maybe lives in LA.
Eric Sermon. Can't forget about Eric Sermon.
Eric Sermon, perfect examples, right? So Durk, at a certain point, he's like, yeah, he's a Chicago rapper, but it's like, you're just in Atlanta. And it's like, you're just part of the system at a certain point. You go to the studios, you show up to the sessions, you're working with whoever's around. You're in that system. That, to me, that's when we get this version of Durk. Do you hear the music changing at all from the Atlanta period? Do you think that those records are different? And if so, how?
I think he was able to take the Chicago stuff, the Chicago sound, and kind of merge it with what was happening in Atlanta. And he just got with the right artists. He knew who to work with. And like, he knew what rooms to be in and what studios to go to and who to be around. He knew how to play it. Some people are just good at understanding the temperature, understanding what needs to be done, who to work with, when to work with him. And I think he's always had that. He's been able to see a few steps ahead. And I think that was very calculated, where a lot of the artists in Chicago didn't do that. They stayed here. They went to L.A. He didn't go to L.A. Most of the people go to L.A. He didn't go to L.A. He went to Atlanta. And I think that maybe it was dumb luck. Maybe it was calculated. But he went down there. He didn't waste his time. He went down there and got with the right people. He got with the real movers and shakers, and it paid off.
I think we don't talk about that enough, understanding the temperature of the room. We don't talk about that enough as a crucial part of the skill set. We can spend all day talking about who has bars, who has great melodies, who uses great words, who paints vivid pictures. If you have all those things and you're in the wrong room,
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't mean anything.
He knew what rooms to be in and who to work with at the right moment. And that is a skill and a talent in and of itself that I think, like you said, it's underrated.
Is there a song from that era, like the Durk 2.0 era, that really sticks in your mind and like, oh, he really like, he figured something out?
Well, he had that song called Extravagant with Nicki Minaj. And then when he shows up on a song with Nicki Minaj, this is different. This is 2019. It's on Love Songs for the Streets 2. And that to me felt like, all right, dude, he's doing songs with Nicki. Like, Nicki's jumping in. This is serious.
All right, Extravagant, Durk and Nicki Minaj.
Best I ever had, not a diss line. In the best part, kiss the whole time.
Bend you over, scratch your back up. Lick your your chest. Pull your tracks out. Lick on your neck. Be your thumb in your.
There are so many tapes from this stretch of time, tapes and albums. We have Sign to the Streets, that series, Love Songs for the Streets series, Just Cause Y'all Waited, that series, Only the Family Involved, that series. There's also the tape, I think in 2021, maybe, him and Lil Baby did a whole tape together.
Yeah, he had a project with T Grizzly that people forget about.
It's the amount of output is really impressive. Can you talk a little bit about Dirk as like a worker? Because I feel not everybody works that hard. This is an impressive amount of music to be putting out in a 3 or 4 year run.
I don't know how he did it, and it's quality. And it was just like it. The fans were just eating it up, and it just kept coming and coming. And he's doing his own stuff, and he's putting out. He's helping with Vaughn, and then he's got the OTF stuff happening. He's got his own label, and he's putting all his people on. And he's fighting all, he's got all this stuff going on. It was just like, it felt like not chaotic in a bad way, but man, how's this guy able to manage everything like this?
We should talk just briefly about Vaughn. So Vaughn obviously was killed in 2020. Can you talk a little bit about Dirk and Vaughn's relationship?
They were cousins, quote unquote. I don't know if they were blood cousins per se, but they were real tight. And I met Vaughn before he was rapping. I met him years ago before he was even a rapper. He was just around. And I felt like they both kind of heat each other. They both turned each other up in a way. I think it's obviously unfortunate what happened to Vaughn. And he's become this, not a cult personality, but dude, the internet eats him up. There's like totally fan fiction and all these conspiracy theories about him and everything. But he was on his way. He had a similar thing to Dirk where he had the look. He knew what rooms to be in. He knew what records to make. He had the full package. And those two together was like, that was like Jordan and Pippen type of situation.
In a way, I felt like Vaughn maybe even was going to have a faster path towards broader acceptance than Dirk was taking. But let's listen. This is Crazy Story. This is the remix with Dirk. So this is King Vaughn Crazy Story, Lil Dirk remix.
On the curb, boy, we put in work from 64th and from 65th. We not from 63rd. I got a drop on the rapid. I be from the rack. I'm like, cool, better not front your movie. You become a pack. You see Vaughn, you see 40 Glossy Buka, you see Mac. Yeah, free Mac going for a double homie. Phone them, got your back. From that.
It felt to me that where Dirk had been working for 8 years to get where he was, it was like all of a sudden Vaughn shoots up, boom, and he's achieving all this stuff so fast. And he's not on a major label. He's on Empire, and his records are streaming. Like, it's going great. Like, the girls love him. The guys love. He just had a really, he had the, and this is a bad comparison, but the LL Cool J Tupac thing where guys want to be you, girls, you know, that whole thing. Not everybody has that. And it was just, he was moving fast. He had the street credibility. He had the ladies. It was like the perfect storm. And it was just all cut down so short. It felt like he was ascending. It was over.
It reminded me a little bit Gucci and Waka. Now, the relationship between Gucci and Waka, maybe not as organic as the relationship between Dirk and Vaughn, but in terms of like Gucci in the trenches, a decade, Waka comes up under him through the management, you know, but it's like, it's sort of like under the umbrella, but maybe like slightly different. And Waka just takes off so fast. Now, I don't know if Waka, to me, Vaughn was moving even faster than Waka had moved. But I think that relationship of like the 10 years of Gucci pays off in like the 1 year of Waka. To me, the like 7 years of Dirk paid off in like the 2 years of Vaughn.
And Dirk laid the groundwork. And I think that's why a lot of the artists, like Dirk comes with a built-in fan base. I think a lot of the drill artists, especially in Chicago, come with like their built-in fan base. And it's like most of the industry was not paying attention to it because everybody wanted to move away from drill because drill became a bad word. It became synonymous with violence and the industry didn't backed away from it. It didn't die. I think everybody thought it was going to die, including I thought it was going to die, but it didn't go anywhere. It just kept festering
and mutating.
Yeah. And just like underground, like on message boards. And then it starts happening in New York and London and all these different, like you said, mutating. Then it explodes all again. And it's like drill becomes this whole worldwide phenomenon. And we're still talking about it 10, 11 years later.
There's something that happens in like 2020 Dirk adopts the moniker The Voice. It's like he's starting to take on like a slightly bigger presence. It's like he's imagined himself as something a little bit bigger than what he was before. What are you hearing in The Voice era? Because there's an album. The album is called The Voice, and then the tape with Baby is The Voice of the Heroes, or The Voice and the Hero. Like, he's like adopting, maybe it's maturation. Maybe it's like stepping into the role of elder statesman. What do you think that was about? Was that connected to losing Vaughn? What do you think he was experiencing at that stretch?
Yeah, I think he starts calling his shot. I think he's feeling himself a little more as an artist, as a personality, as a star. I think he's coming into his own, but he's also dealing with a lot of personal stuff. His brother gets killed. Vaughn gets killed. A lot of people in his inner circle. There's a lot of stuff happening on the streets. There's a lot of stuff happening in the industry. There's just a lot. There's a lot going on. And I think that was maybe his way of like combating that. And also just asserting his position, because he's kind of like, yo, despite everything against me, from law enforcement to the streets to the industry, like, I am persevering through this and I am the voice. I think that was like, that was him kind of like, I have arrived no matter what. You can't stop me kind of moment.
I want to play a record off The Voice. It has Baby on it. It's not from the Dirk Baby tape, but I was really impartial to this record. This is Finesse Out the Gangway. Took a perk and it got me in my feelings. The money make the world spin. The money make the girls grin. Been rapping since 2010. Whoever thought I'd win. The money make the world spin. The money make the girls grin. Been rapping since 2010. Whoever thought I'd win. So we're now also kind of at the Dirk is big enough to be on a Drake record.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not just a single, not like track 16. Not like a Lucy that just goes up on top. This is a single.
Also, during COVID.
Yes, true.
When everybody's captive and has to, like, he could have chosen any, because everybody was available at that time.
Of course. Good point.
He could have picked anybody to be on that.
Really good point. Really good point. It's actually a doubly powerful statement for Drake to say, this was like a... I'm struggling to remember, but it was like the beginning of a rollout of something, of whatever album was coming in 2020 for Drake. I can't quite remember off the top of my head.
Drake had an album, and I think Dirk had an album, and it's like Dirk worked with Nas and Drake within like a 10-day period or something like that at that time. And it just felt like, all right, man, like Dirk's for real now. Like this, he's getting a Nas cosign, which is huge, like for the hip hop heads, right? But like Drake is the biggest thing in rap, right? And Drake's always been good at collaborating with people at the right moment. I mean, he's the best at it. And him putting his arm around Dirk at that moment, like, it was the ultimate battery in the back for Dirk. I mean, it solidified everything. And here's a guy that was already 8 years into his career, but still somehow felt new. Most rappers are lucky if they get three years, 5 years. But it felt like Dirk had worked 8 years to get to this moment where Drake wraps his arm around him. You don't see that a lot. People felt like he was a new artist in a sense.
Especially because Drake often has embraced people very early in their careers. But I just was looking it up while you were talking. This was supposed to be the first single on Certified Lover Boy. It ends up not being on Certified Lover Boy, but it's supposed to be the first. It was, to my memory, the beginning of the Certified Lover Boy rollout. But if I remember correctly, that rollout is like famously a little bit jumbled and a little bit confused. And there's another Dirk record that does end up on Certified Lover Boy, but this sort of is like floating in the ether. But again, a very loud statement of support from the number one most influential rapper on the planet. And I think that, and we said earlier, that song introduced Dirk to a whole other audience of people who are not aware of the 10 tapes that came out in the 3 years prior.
I remember the video came out and everybody was like, oh my God, they're riding on jet skis and they're doing all this crazy stuff. And it was during COVID. So like people weren't even traveling and around each other like that. So it like, it made it even that much bigger of a moment. I just remember everybody in Chicago on the local Instagram pages and like the local news, like everybody was just like floored that Drake and Dirk had this song together. And it was a really big, good, you know, record.
Yeah, a good song. So that also sets the table for like where we're at now with Dirk having these big quote unquote pop, even though they're not pop, but popular records. we can't get to the end of this episode without talking slightly about the Morgan Wallen stuff. This is a source of a tremendous amount of joy for me and a little bit of head scratching. I wonder how you, as someone who's been watching Dirk since L's Anthem, feels about Dirk's friendship and collaborations with this particular individual. And do people in Chicago care?
He just came out at Wrigley Field with him.
I saw that.
People that I never would have imagined texting me, asking me if Little Dirk is coming out, like 40-year-old women, 45-year-old women sending me text messages asking me, hey, do you think Little Dirk is coming out tonight? My kids want to know.
Wow.
So that actually happened. I won't put the person on blast, but they're there with their kids, and their kids are under 10. And they want to know if Little Dirk is coming out.
And so, these are Wallen, true Wallen fan families.
These are country fans. These are not. They would never go to a Little Dirk concert otherwise, but their kids are dying to know. And maybe they were not. Maybe they were ages 10 to 15, right?
Sure. But that makes sense. That's an age where you would be a Wallen fan, but also want to know about Little Dirk for sure.
And they're like asking me for insider information if I know if Little Dirk is coming out. That when I start getting those type of texts, that lets me know that, okay, this guy's in a different realm right now. And he pops out at this guy's concert. He's the biggest thing in country music. This goes back to what we discussed a little bit ago about Dirk being able to understand rooms and read the temperature places and collaborating with people at the right time. I think that's exactly what he's doing here. And it seems they must be real friends because they keep working together.
They do. And they went fishing together recently. Do Chicago rap people care about this at all, positively or negatively?
I don't think people like Morgan so much, you know. Obviously, he's said some things that, you know, I can't stand with him on that. But I think people look at Dirk like he's so far above the game at this point where if he worked with Taylor Swift, it wouldn't feel out of character right now because he's that big.
But it also doesn't derail the fundamental Lil Dirk arc, because this is something I spend a lot of time thinking about with Broadway Girls is a hit. It's not like an A hit, but it's a popular record. It wasn't a huge radio record because it kind of like, where does it go? It's not really a country song. It's not really a Dirk song. It's not really a pop song even. But it's a big enough song that, you know, I think people associate it with Dirk, but it doesn't fundamentally change the arc of what Lil Dirk does.
No. I think he's one of these guys that can do that and get away with it, where I think there's other artists that I think he has enough credibility for a number of reasons that people let it slide, where if it was another artist, they wouldn't let it slide. But with Dirk, this is Dirk. All right, we're not going to say anything.
Letting it slide is like a great way of putting it, because it's like that works in two ways. One, if you've really been rocking with Dirk for a decade, you might look at that and be like, that's a weird guy to do a record with. We will let it slide. But the other thing is, as a fan, like, there are artists whose creative output is not sturdy enough to withstand a big record with an unlikely star. If you do a big record with Wallen and you not solid, you might just always be the guy who did the record with Wallen instead of the guy who's been putting out tapes for 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go back 25 years, rappers might have gotten destroyed for doing something.
That's
like
what I'm saying. Their
careers could have been completely over after that.
Exactly. And I think that's what, to me, that was the most striking thing, was that he did a record with someone like Wallen, who is challenging to some people because of things he has said, but also who's just a legitimately more famous artist, and the record is an unusual kind of record, and Lil Durk comes out without a scratch on him. And he's still who he is.
It's a different era, man, because that, who knows? But he's also a different type of artist. He can get away with that in a way that other people can't. And I don't think anybody batted an eye. I haven't really heard, I think of maybe some head scratching, but I haven't heard anybody be like, man, he's whack for that, or this song sucks or whatever. I don't know. He's in an interesting place. And I just think music in general is in a different place now. There's so much going on that happens and people forget about it. And they move on to the next thing.
I think that's also true. I have had that exact conversation with people who are close to this record. Like, I've had that exact conversation, which is even five years ago, something like this leaves. If you want to call it a stain, it's a stain. If you want to call it a bruise, it's a bruise. If you want to call it a cherry on top, it's a cherry on top. Like, depending, no matter how you view it, I think 5 years ago, it's heavier. It's a heavier stain, a heavier cherry on top, whether you like it or dislike it. But now, it's just, hey, you remember that weird week in December when Broadway Girls came out? Okay, that was weird. And then January happened. And now we're, and that's why even Dirk having Wallen on this record, on the current album, Stand By Me, the most recent album is Almost Healed. It's somehow, it's like a sort of a pop. It's getting a little bit of burn, but it doesn't define who Dirk is. And I think that's actually the most striking thing is he has this J. Cole record that's a legitimate hit. It's not defining who Lil Durk is. He has this Wallen collaboration that maybe could pull him in unusual directions, but it's not defining who he is. And I think the fact that his sturdiness, he's so sturdy, that's what's fascinating to me. Because I don't think that would have been the case 5 years ago for a similar kind of artist.
No, but also, this is a guy who's been building his career for 11 years now. So he has this he has a really strong foundation in a way that somebody that had only been out for a couple years would be easier to topple and knock down. I think he's comfortable in his skin. He's comfortable as an artist, and he has a real foundation and support from his label and his team. Like they really are putting it all behind him. And this goes back to the little button and the big button. He went to Alamo and they hit the biggest big button and it paid off.
Big button boys.
And here we are talking. Yeah, big button boys.
There's nothing more. If you listen to the podcast, you know it's nothing but big button boys on podcast. Andrew Barber, what a joy to traverse the last decade of Lil Durk. I appreciate you. Listen to every podcast ever. nytimes.com/podcast. Podcast Deluxe is on YouTube. It's me and Joe yammering about the things of the week. Go type Podcast Deluxe in the YouTube. Check that out.
Shout out to Joe.
Always get the merch. It's the podcast.myshopify.com. We got some t-shirts left. We got stickers. We're going to be adding stuff. Get the merch. Subscribe to podcast. Anywhere you get your audio content, that's Apple, that's Spotify, that's YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. Email us podcast.nytimes.com. Get in the Discord or the Facebook, tinyurl.com/podcast Discord, podcast Facebook. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. As always, we will be back next week. Here is some Lil Durk and Morgan Wallen with some non-career killing pop crossover. This is Stand By Me.
Are you gonna ride for me? Don't switch no sides with me. Yeah. I need your honesty. No, baby, don't lie to me. Yeah. Are you gonna stand 10 toes if the folks give time to me? Yeah. Baby, when shit get real, I need your loyalty. If tomorrow.